Welcome to Hochoka Podcast.
You don't need to be a superhero to be a top-flight kid whisperer, but there are four superpowers you'll want to make your own. Hello, Mataki Abe. Welcome to Hochoka, here at the center of St. Joe's Indian School's campus. I'm Scott Wooster, your Hochoka host. We're glad you've joined our circle for part three of a three-part series called Kid Whispering Series 2. Today, Mark Fredo joins us again to unpack the wisdom in his book, The Art of Kid Whispering, Reaching the Inside Kid. So Mark, we'll welcome you back to the Hochoka studio.
Thanks again, Scott.
We've been talking about trauma and trauma's impact on the inside kid. Today, we refer to them as superhero powers or skills, but they're really four special skills that you talk about that can help us to reach that kid. Can you just briefly tell us what the four are, and then we'll unpack them one by one?
Engaging, clarifying, deciphering, and responding.
Okay. Let's start, of course, with engaging, and tell me a little bit about what that is.
Well, engaging is really the capacity to connect with another person. Mm-hmm. In our work, before we can do really anything beyond, you know, behavioral, you know, responses or surface management, you know, to be able to have real sort of relational context, we have to be able to engage. And engagement really means understanding interests, you know, presenting in an interested, safe way to allow a young person to see us as possible as somebody they might trust. You know, that takes time, that takes engagement. But what I have found from kids who are among our best teachers is that kids will be willing to trust us in a much shorter time than we would have otherwise thought, or that in the past I would have taught. Mm-hmm. Because my experience with kids, and this is how I learned this from kids, is that if we go about the engagement part of this right, if we engage them in a way where we seem like somebody who's possible, and then through a conversation with our interest and our ability to reflect and to question, they begin to tell us more. And so I have found over the years that kids will talk to me about things that are really significant and important to them, and sometimes things that people who have worked with them don't know. Mm-hmm. And it's in part because, you know, I learned how to do this. I practiced this. It's certainly an acquirable skill, mm-hmm. for, you know, people who are willing to put in the work and the time that's necessary. But it really is really about having conversational skill, to be able to have, you know, interest in the other person, mm-hmm. and to not necessarily to go in, not really to go in with an agenda. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in the development of our work on kid whispering, JC and I talk a lot about what are the things that we do that help kids respond to us, that help kids see us as possible. Mm-hmm. So for him, it was, you know, really it's the beginning of his counseling relationship with them. For me, it's what happens in the moment. You know, when a young person decides that they're willing to spend 20 minutes or 30 minutes with me talking and answering all of my questions. So what we did a lot, actually, when we were training here at St. Joe's many years ago, when I would be up presenting and talking about things, because we typically never stay on script, anything that I said that sounded remotely intelligent, he would write down, mm-hmm. and then I would do the same with him.
Okay. Yeah.
And so we ended up with, you know, pages of notes of, you know, things that we talked about that really had to do with the ways that we engage with kids. Mm-hmm. We don't go in with any predisposed notion of how this is going to go. We're always hopeful and optimistic. And we know that there are certain things that we can do that are going to be more likely to get kids to respond. So engagement really is, you know, at its base is a sort of a safe, caring connection with a young person who sees us as worth a try.
Yep.
And many times that's where it starts. And then engagement continues, because as engagement is relational at its root, it can, for JC and for people who are working with kids on an ongoing basis here, become relationships. Mm-hmm. And in order to have relationships be successful, you know, they have to be maintained in order to be sustained. So relationship maintenance is another piece that, you know, we will talk more about in the second book. But relational maintenance is, you know, how do you keep it healthy? We have to do it with our cars. We have to do it with our houses. Mm-hmm. We have to do it with relationships, you know, to keep them strong and healthy, and to evolve. We have to be able to adapt and evolve the relationship. And it's mutual when we get this engagement with kids, and it allows us to keep that going, because there's going to be learning and growth on both sides of this relationship that we want to be able to bring to the benefit of the conversation and to the engagement that we have.
Okay. So you get the engagement, and once you have that, how does the clarifying, the second step, work? What's that superpower?
You know, in all of the work that we do where we talk about engaging with kids, right beyond that, a corollary piece of that is understanding. And so the clarifying piece is really understanding. And a lot of times when we get a young person to be talking about an experience that they had, we want to be able to engage with them in that interested and curious way that allows them to tell their story. So we ask lots of questions, you know, in LSCI or in any of these other things we call the timeline or the story. Mm-hmm. We want to listen to their story. Now, a lot of times, particularly if it's been a difficult experience for kids, if they're just coming through, you know, some sort of crisis or significant event, you know, they had a heightened state of emotion. And so we realize that when our brains are in a heightened state of emotion, we don't do our best thinking. So once we help them to become settled and we listen to their story, the clarifying part comes when we're asking reflective questions, where we're responding to things that they say with interest and curiosity, the wondering part, you know, that I talked about before, that not knowing yet wondering, allowing them to talk. Because a lot of times when kids are telling us their story, this is the first time they're hearing their story. They just had an experience. And now that we're listening as deeply as we can through this, the clarifying part is to help not only for the story to become clear for us, but also to be clear for them.
Yeah.
And so as kids tell us a story, we sort of listen into it. And as we reflect and ask more questions, which is really important, being able to ask questions, asking small questions is really important. What happens is, as a kid is relating and telling us their story, and we are going through it again, sometimes they say, oh yeah, and now I forgot this, or I just remembered this. Mm-hmm. You know, some people might say that they're withholding or lying or whatever. Right. We realize this is the way our brain works,
right,
particularly
yeah.
in heightened states of emotion. And when we're dealing with something that is important, that recall will come, and things will become clear to not only them, but us. And so as that clarification occurs through that ongoing back and forth, you know, listening, and you know, in questioning, then things become more clear. And
right.
once things are more clear, then we have a better chance to do something about it.
Which would be the next step, which is deciphering, correct?
Yes, the deciphering really is once we have that understanding, you know, we then explore, what does this mean to the young person? You know, it's similar to decoding, is that we're kind of looking beyond. Now that we have the story, now that the kid has been able to express the story, now we can look at the implications. You know, what are the implications of understanding this now? What does this mean for what you understand? What does it mean for how you engage? You know, we try to help kids really think through, how did what just happened happen? You know, is this what you hoped would happen? Mm-hmm. Is this what you intended to happen? You know, that kind of questioning, so that we can then, you know, get use the understanding to try to consider what are the implications of this and what does it mean, and so how might we move forward? You know, what kind of things do we want to work on? What kind of things do, you know, how do you want to look at things in a different way than you did before? You know, a lot of that sort of engagement is, it's really helpful for kids.
Absolutely. And the last would be responding. And what does that look like?
Responding in part is sort of when we get to talk. And when I say when we get to talk, is much of this dialogue is about listening and questioning. Listening and questioning. So the responding part would be for us to do two things. One, to be able to relate what we now understand in our own words. And to give them a sense of what their story sounds like from another perspective, because everything we've done so far has been to help them express and understand their experience. So in responding skills, we're now giving back to them. Okay, here's what I think you're telling me. Here's what, you know, the implications of this might be here. This is where we actually get to challenge kids. You know, and we challenge kids not in an authoritarian way. We challenge kids in an authoritative way, where we're confident and competent in what we're doing, where we're going to try to challenge kids to do things differently. You know, one of the things that we do, and I mentioned this earlier, is that so much of the time we ask kids to do things that they haven't done well before. We ask them to do those things sometimes in, you know, sort of higher stress or more visible ways. So for kids, it's risk. You know, they're risking, you know, stumbling or being embarrassed or not being successful or whatever. And a lot of adults would balk at that in those kind of moments. And I think we have to be mindful and sensitive to that. So in responding, we're going to try to challenge kids to, with that understanding, to, you know, sort of raise their game, change their approach, understand differently, communicate differently, become more responsive rather than reacting. And so it's an opportunity for us. We're now having a more, you know, prominent place in the conversation, where it's still dialogue and it's still about the young person.
Right.
But in our responding skills, we're getting to sort of relate it through our perspective.
Yeah. And I think if you, this is my take on what you said, but the first, if you do the first three stages right, if you put the time in, take yourself out of the way, get your ego out of it, and do the first three right, you said that as you respond, you're asking the kid to rise to a certain level to address behavior symptoms, whatever might be happening. I think if you do the first three right, most of the times the kid will respond and rise to that level.
And what we're talking about in responding skills is we're not lecturing. We're not doing, therefore, this is what needs to happen. It's still an engagement process. We're just taking more of a lead in this dialogue than we had earlier. While we were doing, you know, navigating and guiding, now we're able to sort of say stuff. But again, it's not lecturing. It's not directing. It's not, you know, we don't really put demands. We're going to create challenges. And, you know, how do you want to move forward? What kind of things are you willing to try? What kind of support do you need to be able to do this together? And kids are more likely to respond to that once they feel like they've been listened and understood, or at least trying to understand.
I agree. Fair and thorough. I like that too. So, do you have a real life example of this, or example or two of this in action sometime when you've used that with the kid or use these superpowers with the kid?
Oh, there's lots of, lots of stories. One, with a kid here in South Dakota, I was talking with him and he was in a detention center. And I got called in probably 7 months after this significant incident occurred, where he actually stabbed his brother. And he was having a hard time talking about this. He actually referred to it as a blackout. I blacked out, I can't. So this went on for a long time. And he said the same thing to everybody. So I was asked to come in and to engage with him. And so I went through the story and, you know, listening to what he was saying. And each time we got to the place where the, like, where this happened, what actually happened, he would say, I blacked out. So one of the things that I noted is that when we got to that place and he was saying, I blacked out, what I noticed was that he put his head down. He was a kid with long hair that would sort of, you know, provide him a shield. He put his head down, he kind of looked away, and his respiration changed, and his nostrils flared. And so I saw that a couple times, because I ask over and over again sometimes. So I said to him, when we got to that part, this is what I saw. Let me just tell you what it looked like from my side. And so I described to him what I described to you. I said, when I see that happen, it makes me wonder. It makes me wonder if maybe you do remember, and it's really hard to think about and really hard to talk about. And then the voice in my head said, shut up. And he just sat for a minute and he nodded his head. And so after all this time, what all I did was reflect back his nonverbal communication. Verbally, he said the same thing consistently to everybody who talked to him. Being able to listen past the words and watch the kind of reaction his body, what his body was communicating was stress. And so just reflecting back. Now later on when I asked him how it is that we got to that place where we could have this more complete conversation, he said to me, well, because you ask good questions. And thank you for that. How are my questions different than other people who asked you questions? And he said, well, you asked me questions about what I'm talking about. And the only piece of that, and I confirmed with him, was the nonverbal communication. When he was able to, actually this example is in our book as well. It's one example at the end of the book. We're just being able to engage. So it's really about engagement and clarifying and, you know, and deciphering. And then when we get to the last place, when he realizes that I really was attending to him and what he's, what his body was saying, not his words.
Right.
He was able to then talk about it. And the sort of happy-ish ending to the story is that the judge, who was very open and supportive of this process, allowed a pretty crazy plan, which was going to result in having him be back at home, you know, with his brother and his family. And so I, because I was in Sioux Falls, I called my brother JC, who's running a psychology agency, and asked him if he had a therapist who was available to do this, and he did. And so I sort of handed it off to Jay and his team, and they were able to work through to the place where this kid actually did was able to go back home.
Really?
Yeah,
wow.
It was a pretty powerful,
an
unusual ending to stories like
that. Right, exactly,
So it was pretty cool.
So for, and I was thinking in terms of this student population that I work with, so here at St. Joe's Indian School, these skills have to be a real benefit for all the people that work with them. Can you comment on that?
You know, one of the things that I notice as I walk around the campus, and we were actually able to have dinner at one of the houses recently with the boys, is that here, the kids, while they may be as curious, aren't as initially engaging as other kids. In a lot of places I go, kids will walk up to me and say, who are you and what are you doing here? Or, you know, are you a boss? Or are you, you know, whatever
you're doing.
I don't see that very much here. So for me, it's a more patient process. You know, just being present. When we were at the house having dinner, you know, with the boys a couple of nights ago, it really took a few minutes. I kind of walked around trying to engage, trying to do some initial, you know, connection with kids, and they would respond, but they would respond in really limited ways. And so I understood they're not ready for this. Also, again, I understand I'm a foreign particle, you know, and here's some other, you know, old white guy walking around who has questions, and we don't know, you know, who he is or what he's doing. But once we sat and I was sitting at a table having dinner with them, then I and they both had sort of a captive audience because we were sitting there you know, at the dinner table, over a meal, and I could ask, you know, questions, you know, what is your name, and, you know, what is your grade, and, you know, that sort of thing. What do you like to eat? Does, you know, does Mr. Steve, is he a good cook, or mm-hmm. or whatever? And they would start with that, and then they started to talk with each other, which gave me an opportunity to respond to some of that. So it's really just understanding that there's a reticence on their part to begin to engage. Mm-hmm. Once they did begin to engage, they started to laugh, they started to, you know, crack on each other and mm-hmm. include me in that or explain some of the things that was going on. So it's a slower, more sensitive process, and it's really about their needs. And it's about understanding what are they comfortable with, you know, what are they expecting. Mm-hmm. And once they realize that I'm just a guest and I'm not threatening and I'm not there for them, this is actually true of lots of other places, when they realize that I have some purpose that really isn't about
them,
although it is about them.
Yeah. Oh, no, but it's me. Yeah.
Indirectly, they're able to do that. And then, so after dinner, when we were getting ready to leave, we talked a little bit, and they became very interested in my ring. Mm-hmm. I just recently have been wearing a football national championship ring that we got from a long time ago, and I usually don't wear it, but because of some recent event, I've been wearing it. Mm-hmm. They were fascinated by it, but it took them all that time to get to that place. But, you know, then I shared it with them, and they were trying it on and asking questions about it. They were quite interested and excited. So apparently it wasn't my bubbling personality interesting. It was a little bit of bling.
It brought the props out.
That made him do it. But again, I think it's just about, you know, being able to be sensitive and understanding to what their needs are. And on this campus, there are some kids who are more likely to walk up and say, who are you and what are you doing here? And a lot of kids who are going to be sort of quiet and wait and you know, see how this unfolds. And again, I had to engage. I had to try to, you know, engage with them in a way where they thought, you know, I'm relatively harmless.
Yeah.
And then they could laugh, and then they could share things about, you know, their experience here, because I always have questions.
Yeah. Yep. And you had to be non-threatening to the kids.
Absolutely. And whatever. And I think, so if you're working here, you know, if I'm working here, you know, beyond my, if I'm a new staff here, I'm probably going to get the same reaction, mm-hmm. although I may be more threatening because I'm a new staff here. And I'm going to be able to get up in their business and tell them what to do and those sorts of things. So, you know, what I want to understand is that, you know, the pulse here, sort of the kid culture here, is such that, you know, they will warm up to you in their time. You just have to give them something to respond to.
Once again, thank you for joining us here at Ho-Choka today. And thank you, audience, for being with us here in the Ho-Choka at the center of St. Joseph's Indian School's campus, where we talk about issues that are central to Native American education today. Until next time, stay centered.